All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our daily fantasy NFL podcast for Friday, September 2nd. I am Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are going to spend today talking a little bit or a lot about wide receiver strategy for daily fantasy, FanDuel, and DraftKings, some things that you can look at when you're trying to set some lineups for those sites, specifically having to do with the wide receivers. We are from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short, and you can head over to the site now to grab a free trial to our projection system for NFL by using the link /lab, so DFSR.com/lab, where you will grab a free trial through the first week of NFL. That's going to include player projections, optimal lineups powered by Lineup Lab, and also access to our brand new state-of-the-art Player Lab, which allows you to filter for any number of different criteria. You know, specifically for wide receivers, you can look at target trends, reception trends, snaps, Vegas over-unders, basically really anything you would want to look at when rostering wide receivers and really any other position as you're going to make your lineups. Again, that's free from now through the first week of NFL and then $29.95 a month after that. James, you yesterday posted your wide receiver positional primer. And for those that are first-time listeners, head back into the podcast archives here. We did a breakdown of quarterbacks. We spent a couple of episodes talking about news leading up. We did an episode about running backs. And now we're going to, like we said, talk specifically about wide receivers. Tell me a little bit, you know, where you sort of start with wide receivers when you're looking at who to roster. Obviously, wide receiver is one of the big changes in the NFL in recent years and how the league kind of views them and uses them.
Yeah, I think one thing we started getting into last season was turning on its head the notion that running backs are necessarily where you find all your safety from week to week. While I still think that running backs writ large are the safest position, our research into the subject kind of painted a much closer picture than I think a lot of people realize. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that when people do broader analyses, they generally tend to look at a position as a whole and not break down, you know, the sort of performance. And I know pro DFS players do this, but I'm talking about kind of general analysis, certainly season-long guys and people that take it a little bit less seriously than professional DFS guys. But what we found was that the top-end wide receivers are actually almost every bit as safe as running backs more generally. And while there's more safety in the highest end at running back, particularly like Adrian Peterson really is the one guy that comes to mind here, that after you get that, there's a pretty dramatic drop-off. In the wide receiver primer that I posted on the site recently, I just broke down a very simple metric, which is just 1,000-yard rushers versus 1,000-yard receivers. And forever, I mean, it used to be that you'd have more 1,000-yard rushers than receivers. Then the trend started to, you know, they started to vary a little bit, went back in the direction of having, you know, just a few more wide receivers. And then in the last 3 years, we saw, so like just to throw out a few years. So in 2010, we had 17,000-yard rushers and 17,000-yard receivers. Last year, we had 7,000-yard rushers and 26,000-yard receivers. So everything has changed, basically, in the NFL. And so if you're still evaluating wide receiver talent and wide receiver safety and performance based on 2012 information, like whenever you first started playing daily fantasy or fantasy in general, you're going to be significantly behind the curve.
Yeah, and that's the most interesting thing about just the safety, which we'll get into a second, the implied safety with a wide receiver and how the certain teams use their, especially their wide receiver. And we're going to mostly probably focus on wide receiver ones here because those are the guys where after really wide receiver one is where you see a dip in safety on just, you know, how teams employ their top tier guy. But mm-hmm. just what you're getting from the salaries on these guys is just as safe, if not safer, than you know, a majority of running backs also. So, yeah, I'm totally with you. This position has totally changed. It, you know, it's a little different between FanDuel and DraftKings in the way they score it. You know, DraftKings is a full point PPR. FanDuel is only half a point PPR. That changes some things for, you know, some players here and there, considering that, you know, that point difference does sort of add up in the aggregate. But for the most part, spending up at wide receiver is now just a pretty safe venture, all things considered across DFS.
Oh, totally. And I think running back, I mean, we talked about running back on the last podcast too, and I don't want to belabor the point necessarily, but with 7,000-yard rushers, you're maybe in your head, you're picturing like all the elite guys, the household name type guys. You know, it wasn't even that. Like if you want to take some of the 1,000-yard rushers from last season. You're talking about Chris Ivory, Darren McFadden, you know, Devontae Freeman, who fell off a cliff after a hot start. So there's a lot of speculation that you're going to have to do at the running back position. That all that being said, you're also going to be, you know, not every running back is created equally every week. Like D'Angelo Williams wasn't a 1,000-yard rusher, but he was a slam dunk DFS play for several weeks. David Johnson the same way. So, you know, it's not apples to apples. Wide receivers tend not to pop up out of nowhere in the same way that running backs do, just because, you know, if Julio Jones goes down, it doesn't mean that, you know, Roddy White historically would just replicate Julio Jones's numbers, you know?
Right.
But yeah, so the fact that you get the point per reception or half point per reception, combined with the fact that, you know, they're going to get double or triple the number of yards per touch that a running back would, means that you're going to really want to look at wide receivers when it comes to building out the higher dollar positions in your lineup. I mean, frankly, in all formats too, right? In many cases at running back, you're going to be able to get a reasonable play in the $6,000 to $7,000 range on FanDuel, where if you go in the other direction and play a $6,000 wide receiver and pair that with Adrian Peterson versus pairing Antonio Brown with, you know, the flavor of the week, you know, David Johnson type who's filling in on a reasonable team, you're going to be left out in the cold. So as you go into this season, I think that's one of the most fundamental things to understand is that wide receiver in many cases is where you're going to get not only your safety, but your upside.
And I think that's an idea that most people that have been playing DFS for, like, let's say 2 years now completely understand. I mean, really, you actually even understand it too, because even the way that season long drafts have broken down now, where it's not something that's escaping even the common fan at this point. So when you look at, like, you know, cheat sheets or whatever, top 100 rankings or whatever it is, when you're doing a season long draft, you'll see the spread of running backs to wide receivers is about 50-50 in the first round, I think, depending on, you know, overall league scoring. But I would say in general, that's a pretty safe number, is that, you know, a 10 team league is going to split it up between those top five or so tippy top wide receivers and then the top five or so running backs, and that just hasn't been the case. So I think even if you're making this transition from season long to DFS, it's not totally lost on you the value of these guys. We'll spend a little time later talking about some situations for guys that might be changing where we can grab some value. But the guys, you know, at the top of this list, the Antonio Browns, Odell Beckham, Julio Jones, these guys are just target machines who – it's really, like, I'm with you, it's totally worth it to pay up for these guys in most situations, just because if they're going to see 11 to 14 or more targets in a given situation, that is about as safe as it gets.
Yeah, right on. And so I think, you know, you mentioned how many targets guys are seeing per game. What we found in all of our inquiry into the subject is that basically targets are the best predictor of...
Yes.
You know, success going forward. Now, there are outliers to this example, and I can touch on a few of those, but generally speaking, the receptions leaders are just the target leaders as well. Like, if you go down, for instance, like, I'm just looking at the top six guys in targets for 2015. Those are also the top six guys. I'm sorry, they're six of the top seven in terms of overall receptions. And of course, you know, when you're catching the ball, that makes it much more likely that you will then run around and score touchdowns and acquire yards and so on. So again, we're not, you know, cracking the Tower of Babel here or anything like that by pointing that out. But I think a lot of people want to start with receptions or overall yards, particularly not so much going into the season, but particularly as the season goes along, they'll be like, hey, guy X had three catches for 114 yards and two touchdowns last week. Like, is he on our radar for this week? And usually the answer is no. You know, like, unless he's some sort of transcendent talent, but his team doesn't realize it. So, you know, he's going to, on average, you know, get two touchdowns every four targets or something. But his team only wants to throw him the ball four times. Like, that's just not going to happen. So by and large, we're just trying to figure out who a team is going to be looking at in a given week.
And it speaks to also, you know, the other, so obviously targets are highly correlated with fantasy success. I think I ran it as a 0.7 correlation, which was by far the highest. I mean, receptions were the highest at 0.78, but I don't know, most guys regress to their, how many balls are there thrown to how many they receive over the course of time. So we end up just, modeling by targets alone, but let me
jump in there. So yes, we model opportunity based on targets, but we do account for the fact that, you know, receivers, based on how they're used on their teams, you know, will pull in a different, you know, amount of balls, right? So like a few examples that come to mind are Larry Fitzgerald on Arizona, you know, 109 receptions on 145 targets last season. But, you know, he only averaged 11.1 yards per catch. So that's obviously quite a small number compared to a guy like Allen Robinson, who averaged 17.5 yards a catch. Now, if Larry Fitzgerald ran Allen Robinson's routes, though, he wouldn't have had 109 receptions on 145 targets. So, you know, there's going to be guys like this that pop up, like Golden Tate comes to mind, the way he was used in Detroit last season, although that might change with a, you know, no Megatron all season long. Jordan Matthews on the Eagles kind of did this as well. But yeah, by and large, pretty much receivers do what receivers do.
And but I didn't want to misspeak there. I meant we regress it to a lot of their personal catch rates. Not so much just yes, like not an NFL wide average for how many times like that a player catches the ball. I didn't want to imply that it was just a base number. No, we do it per player. And when we look at, you know, success, a wide receiver, you know, those red zone opportunities, in addition to targets, are the things we talk a lot about. You know, if you're getting looked at near the end zone, this is the best way to score a lot of points, right? Because it's the easiest way to pile up points. And the best wide receivers in the league just happen to also be the guys that their teams look to the most in the end zone as well. Like Antonio Brown had the second most red zone targets last year. DeAndre Hopkins was fourth. Allen Robinson was fifth. So the names that are at the top of the overall targets list are also the guys that just get targeted the most when they get down toward the end zone.
Yeah, generally speaking. I mean, I think, again, you're going to always be able to find exceptions to these rules. You know, some guys' games don't play as well down low. Just maybe they're like a, you know, short, speedy guy, or, you know, whatever the reason is. When the field gets condensed, then they shine a little bit less. But yeah, it's interesting how I think a lot of times at wide receiver, people want to go overly deep, but they're not, you know, they're going a mile wide and an inch deep on a bunch of different factors instead of going, you know, an inch wide and a mile deep on the thing that matters most, which is how a team perceives that wide receiver's role in the offense. That being said, you know, if you could get a perfect list of how many times a guy would be targeted in a given week, and especially in the red zone, that would be fantastic. Since that list doesn't exist, I think it's probably worthwhile to go into kind of how we generate our target projections, which are done, by the way, basically by hand for every single player. You know, that's done, you know, there's definitely some automation there, but by and large, it's like, you know, it's tweaked based on our perception of things. So yeah, I think it'd be worth it to go into just why we're tweaking things and how we're tweaking them and so on.
But real quick, do you know who the most highly targeted wide receiver in the red zone was last year?
Do I know? I don't know offhand, so I'm going to guess. The most highly targeted wide receiver in the red zone last season.
This is good listening right here.
Can I have three guesses?
Go. Yeah, three. Hurry up.
Okay. Don't tell me hurry up, buddy. Okay. Let me work through this because I have a lot that I'm thinking of. I'm going to say Brandon Marshall.
He was 10th.
10th? Oh, goodness. Odell Beckham.
He was below Marshall.
Oh, God. Below Marshall. Okay.
I'm just going to tell you it was Eric Decker. Eric Decker had 28 targets.
Eric Decker. What about Eric Decker over on the Jets?
He was 20% higher than the next 20% higher than the next highest player. That just struck me as that just stood out to me. I guess I maybe had seen that and just not totally ingested it as.
That's a really fascinating kind of piece of trivia. I mean, it does definitely speak to the Jets had something. I mean, we saw this with Julius Thomas a few years ago. Jimmy Graham was used this way in New Orleans. Sometimes teams just have a thought or a specific player, a specific set that they like to run. Also worth noting though that the Jets, they were fifth overall in touchdown passes in the red zone last season. So it's kind of no surprise that they would have one of the most targeted guys. So,
well, they had the number one guy and the number nine guy. Marshall was 9, not 10. So
way to make me seem like an idiot, dude. That was awesome.
Anyway, moving on. So let's talk about how we, you know, you mentioned at the beginning, you tried to get into it and
calculating targets,
and then I derailed you with my little piece of nonsensical trivia, but, calculating targets. Let's talk about what our process here is, and maybe that will also lead into a discussion of some of the guys that we're taking an extra close look at this season that are either moving into new situations or in the same situation with a new team dynamic. Yeah. So walk us through a little bit of, you know, what your and my process is on a week-to-week basis for looking at targets.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. So I'll start as wide as possible first and then get a little bit more narrow. So where we'd like to start generally is first of all, just figuring out who this guy's playing against, right? And there's a few really specific factors we're looking at there. The first thing is just the opponent's or the opposing defense's pace allowed, so how many just overall plays they allow per game. This will give us a baseline on how many plays a given team is likely to run in a given week. Now, of course, that's not, you know, there's strength of schedule adjustments that need to be made and all sorts of little tweaks and toggles there. But generally, that will give us, especially as the season goes along, a fairly clear picture on what kind of game script we're looking at. And likewise, especially early, we can use the Vegas total to imply this. I mean, we don't need to go down this road for the thousandth time, but we find the Vegas total to be a very reliable starting place to figure out, you know, just how fast Vegas sort of perceives the game to be. I think Vegas does a nice job of not running into fallacies like, you know, a lot of people will have where, oh, these teams are just going to keep getting in the 35-yard line and punting. Like, yeah, they might do that, and that might be how the game plays out. But generally, good offenses score points, and scoring points means more possessions and more fantasy points to go around. So that's kind of the highest level stuff. And from there, we actually do break down on a basis of what slot that receiver is in on his team and how the opposing team has defended that slot or how we project them to defend that slot. So, you know, we actually have rankings for, you know, if you're a wide receiver one facing Detroit, you're going to get a different modifier than a wide receiver two facing Detroit and so on. This accounts for things like shutdown cornerbacks or, you know, just a huge disparity in talent. Maybe you have a league average cornerback at cornerback one and an awful cornerback at cornerback two. So it accounts for things like that. So we're starting with that matchup, though. You know, just who is this guy against, and how are we going to modify sort of his baseline targets? Does that pretty well encapsulate the what we're looking at on the opposing side of the ball for you?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, that's one thing that gets missed a lot by just the common fan is you can read in a little bit too much into team. You can read a little bit too much sometimes into defense versus a certain position, let's say, or defense just as a whole, like as like how good a defense is, because you can be like labeled a decent defense, but also sort of the amount of volume the other team gets doesn't always factor in the amount of volume another team gets.
Yeah. 100%. And I think that's spot on. And I think that, you know, it also just doesn't account for, like, for instance, when we first started doing this early on, you know, kind of the best practice in the industry was to take passing yards allowed and like, so a team's passing yards allowed and then distribute them roughly among the wide receivers on the other team in a proportional way. But the big problem with this is it would really unfairly penalize guys who were facing a team that had a shutdown corner, but didn't have necessarily a shutdown cornerback too. And it would actually unfairly prop up guys who were facing that shutdown corner. So like take the Patriots in recent history. I mean, the classic example of this is going to be before a lot of our listeners' time, was Nnamdi Asamoah, who was, you know, arguably the greatest shutdown corner of all time. You know, if you ever just want to read some incredible stats on Nnamdi Asamoah, it's just ridiculous, but essentially he would go whole seasons where, you know, opposing quarterbacks only targeted the receiver he was covering like 18 times in a whole season and stuff like that. Like, just completely ridiculous stuff. But the Raiders at the time didn't have cornerbacks that were nearly as good as him. So it would be an incredible mistake to play any wide receiver one against Asamoah, and, you know, probably a mistake not to play the wide receiver two because everyone else's targets were so buoyed by the fact that he would essentially take one guy completely off the field by himself. And so we've seen recent examples of this, like Darrell Revis and Josh Norman to a lesser extent. But yeah, we definitely don't want to just look at a team's general profile when it comes to passing yards allowed. We really want to drill down to the slot-specific role and see how they do against different wide receiver types and tight ends.
And there's data out there that exists, you know, sort of out there in the ether that will kind of inform you on these things.
It's right there on our site. Yeah. In our player lab, we rank this. I mean, we're not going to show you how the sausage is made there just because it's not, you know, not reasonable to do that necessarily. But yeah, you can sort by poor cornerback rank and figure out, you know, is a team up against a good wide receiver or aren't they?
Yeah, and so we've broken those things down and we've applied, you know, weighted metrics to them that help us say, like, you know, this guy versus a wide, this guy is a wide receiver one. This is how the other team plays pace-wise, overall-wise, and versus this specific position. And we're breaking it down really on that micro level and even beyond because we haven't really gone into all the different things that go into this. But these are some of the base. These are the most important things, I think. And we're really breaking it down onto those sort of granular levels that you just have to do. You have to do that if you're going to make good projections. And we've seen time and time again where either people, so I think there's two things that happen. One, people understand the fact that, like, you're going against Richard Sherman, so therefore you should not probably play said wide receiver against him. And they'll understand it on a 1,000-foot level, but they're not going to understand it on the actual what happens level, like down to the very numbers. Or they just make the mistake of saying, we're just going to play this guy because he's playing against this other team, blah, blah, blah. And they just and they just go too broad and just don't understand it. So I think that we're breaking this down sort of on the right different levels and by percentages and, you know, metrics that we need to actually spit it out an accurate number in terms of projection. Give me some of the other pieces of information that we are throwing in there and that you're specifically considering on a wide, for wide receivers on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, sure. So I think that, you know, by and large, a team's, you know, how often a guy has been targeted on a per game basis is actually a pretty good place to start. You know, teams generally speaking will stick with the same game plan. Obviously, if you see huge changes, it's really behooves you to go and just figure out why. So like maybe you see that, you know, Jarvis Landry's targets are way down for week one. Well, okay, he was facing Seattle and Richard Sherman, and, you know, maybe there was a good reason for that. But as we go, as the season progresses, if you see that his targets are just down on a season-long basis, you really need to adjust your preseason expectations for him. That being said, there's more to than just looking at the previous week's targets, mostly because guys get hurt so much in the NFL, and roles tend to change at the wide receiver position way more often than they do at they change on performance basis more often than running backs from my perspective. So, and this is not in the wide receiver one, like ace category. Antonio Brown's not losing his job almost no matter what happens this season.
Right.
But as you get down to that wide receiver two and three territory, we start to see a lot more experimentation on a team-wide basis. And you are going to have to play those guys, you know, especially in big tournaments, especially if you're trying to run a stack to take down a huge tournament. And in particular, if you just, you just can't spend up at every position in football. That's just not the way it works. So around the edges, you know, we want to look at two big factors. So obviously the first one is targets. The second one is, has a highly targeted guy gone out of favor or gotten hurt, you know, spreading those targets around? Like teams generally won't, like say when Dez Bryant went down, it's not like the Cowboys just don't pass anymore. Like usually they find new people to pass to. The Lions were a great example of this, where Golden Tate essentially slotted right in and just got all of Calvin Johnson's targets. We saw the same thing happen with like Mohamed Sanu in Baltimore or in Cincinnati. So, you know, you can't just assume that a team is going to move the passing targets to the running position necessarily. Teams want to stick to their plan. The other one, if you want to kind of get guys a little bit more off the radar, is another thing actually in our player lab, which is just overall player snaps. Sometimes a guy will be on the field quite a bit, but won't get targeted for whatever reason. But if you see that a guy like Marques Wilson was a great example of this last season, and I've talked about him quite a bit, but
you sure have, buddy.
He's my go-to crappy receiver who moves into a new position. All right, so leave me alone. Let me finish. when he started getting on the field for a lot more snaps out there, it started to become apparent that the Bears were seeing something there, and that he was a much more likely breakout candidate than a guy who's only on the field for 20 snaps a game. You know, so those are kind of the things we're looking at in terms of trying to grab guys who maybe are a little bit more on the fringes or off people's radars.
Right, because those situations will crop up, and they, you know, maybe they don't strike you as the same kind of situation as you, like as you mentioned, like as the running back, because it just, it's so obvious. Like when a team goes through a new situation with wide receivers, it's different than running backs. You know, the guy is going to get handed the ball, right? Like if he's standing, yes, in the backfield, the quarterback will turn around and hand that person the ball generally. With wide receivers, it's not as crystal clear all the time, especially in the first game where it happens. You can make a lot of determinations after that first game, but sometimes that's just simply too late or the window is closed or whatever. Trying to figure out based on recent tendencies or just what they've done in the past, there is information out there that will point you in the correct direction of what a team will do if given a new wide receiver situation.
Absolutely. And I think it's, football's an interesting one because in some ways it actually does pay to watch the games. And this is going to sound like, well, of course it pays to watch the games, but generally I think we err on the side of trusting the numbers over the eyeball test. But one reason,
for example, I would say in a lot of times at baseball, it does not pay to watch the games. Like
never pays to watch the games.
Like, so just as a comparison where we think like, you know, mm-hmm, some sport like baseball, it's actually not even that fun to watch baseball, but in general, stats will tell you most of the story on what's happened, yes, in baseball over the thing. So I just want to make the distinction that, you know, why we would make the distinction here as opposed to like another sport.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that so in football, the reason I say it's good to watch the games for wide receiver purposes is, you know, again, not all targets are created equally either. And, you know, a quarterback hitting a guy in the chest with a ball and the ball bounces onto the ground is a much different scenario for his chances for targets in the future than, you know, guy gets wide open and the quarterback sort of misthrows it or spikes the ball at his feet or whatever, because quarterbacks and teams in general just hate drops. Like, drops are the bane of their existence, especially high profile ones, ones in the end zone, stuff like that. So, you know, if you're watching a game and a guy seems open and he's getting targets, well, that guy's definitely going to keep getting targets going forward, you know, versus a quarterback forcing a ball in there or, you know, the guy dropping the ball all the time. So I think that, you know, watch it, keep an eye on it. If you're on the fence, you know, you can always go back and watch games again. These things are available all over the place. So, I hate to, I mean, I just realizing I'm like, go watch the film. Don't sit around watching the film all the time.
Right.
But sort of as a tiebreaker thing, you know, if you're, all you have is time, right? There's only one game a week in football. So, so that's something I would look at. I think the last thing I did want to touch on before we move into some specific wide receivers is just interpreting the Vegas lines a little bit more too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked, I nodded to this early on when it comes to projecting targets, but I think another really interesting fact or feature of the Vegas lines is we can also sort of interpret how the game will play out. And, you know, again, game script is something that matters almost not at all for baseball, once again, because, yeah, sure, sometimes a team will be way up and maybe the pitcher will get pulled earlier to save his arm or the starters will get pulled, but that's really, really infrequent. And again, like, you know, Bryce Harper's strategy when he goes up to bat is the same whether he's up 10 or up or down 10, which is just hit the ball as hard as I can. But in football, that's definitely not the case. Like, we see dramatic changes in behavior based on how the game is going. And I was hoping you could weigh in a little bit on game script stuff if you're interested there.
I'm definitely interested. So what we found when we were looking at the top, I think it was 50 or so top running back performances last year, was that while not a heavy correlation, there was definitely what stood out was a majority of those top plays were either from games with high where the team was a heavy favorite or down to sort of a thin spread, but really none of it was coming on the other side of the ball where the team was a dog going in, which made sense, right? Like, teams that stink don't generally run the ball more, or they just stink in general, so it's hard for them to run the ball.
Well, they can't, and they're down by 13 points, and so running the ball just means the game will end.
Right, exactly. And so, right, they'll just go home and hit the showers quicker. That wasn't the same with wide receivers. It was really just spread out pretty evenly between all types of spread. So I don't know. So game script, where we're going to be helped mostly is high total games, where just in general, the teams are expected to score more points. And that's typically reflected already in what teams are projected to do either in the preseason or over the course of the season. Or you can figure it out by just looking at target trends over a very short period of time for a team. So you can figure these things out. Like, teams that play, like, well, this is a bad example now because Bridgewater's out. But the, you know, the Vikings just didn't throw a lot to begin with. And we're all typically playing in games with low totals. So you just really never needed to look at any Vikings wide receivers outside of, you know, maybe a cheap Stephon Diggs here or there. But teams like that, you can figure those teams out really pretty quickly based on really what they already do, and Vegas just has that figured out as well. And so when you're looking, I wouldn't look the games on the lower end of the Vegas implied total spectrum. It wouldn't worry me if a team was, you know, a heavy favorite or not. It would just worry me about how many points are going into that game.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think that wide receivers are really interesting for me because one of the things, I mean, I see wide receivers in two ways. So I always want high totals and thin spreads. That's just going to be, I like that for every skill position player, frankly. But wide receivers I find to be playable when their team is a big dog, and less playable a little bit when their team is a huge favorite, for a couple of reasons. So let's start with the big favorite one, because this is one I think is pretty straightforward. When a team is a big favorite and they get a big lead, especially a team that can spread the ball around quite a bit, all it does is increase your variance for wide receivers. So, yeah, a lot of the times your wide receiver will be involved in stretching out that big lead and, you know, get four quarters worth of production and three quarters worth of play. But wide receivers will tend to disappear when their teams get up by a lot. Even teams like the Patriots, who, you know, will start to sprinkle the passes around, like, you know, short passes, just to kind of run down the clock as sort of their de facto running game. Even on teams like that, your downfield receivers will lose touches, or like Gronkowski, or, you know, the guys that they're more concerned about preserving. That being said, it's not I wouldn't avoid a guy altogether just because he was a huge favorite. But unlike running back, I also want to avoid a guy just because he's a big underdog, as long as his team implied total is still reasonable. And that's because, you know, teams like to throw when they're down. This is not new information. And a lot of guys have done really great things being down. Allen Robinson is the quintessential example here of sort of the garbage time hero, mm-hmm. where last season he had 1,400 yards, 14 touchdowns. And a lot of that came with them down. I know that I saw on Matthew Berry's 100 Facts column that Blake Bortles threw 29 of his 35 passing touchdowns while the Jaguars were trailing. I would imagine, I haven't looked into this because I don't really care, but I'd have to imagine that a lot of those were to Allen Robinson, just giving his, you know, league-leading touchdown total. So yeah, I definitely don't mind taking guys who, you know, score a lot when their team is down. I will say that I feel like downfield targets do lose a little bit of mojo in those things, because teams generally will fall into a prevent defense and just give you all the underneath stuff and take away the downfield ball. That didn't really happen with Robinson last season. He was a huge, huge downfield threat. But yeah, that's just kind of my overall approach.
No, I think that's good. And I think that, I mean, all these factors factor in for us on a week-to-week basis when we're looking at wide receivers. It's a nuanced position, sort of like in the same – not for the same reasons as running back, but a lot of the same reasons, because you just need – it requires a human touch, right? I think this is where our projections tend to win out, just really in every sport, is that we're just spending a lot of time staring at them and making sure they pass both the like the analytical test and just the sniff test, in terms of, is this what a guy is looking to get in terms of production and volume and just overall opportunity in a given week. Before we finish off, let's finish off. So we'll talk about a couple of the guys – who have moved into new situations this year, whether it be their team has changed just completely, they switched to a new team, or they have maybe a new role on a team. Let's start with a guy who I've heard a lot of people talk about this year leading in. I'm not sure what his ownership percentages are going to be like going in. The amount that I've heard about him spoken about, you know, sort of in just from other outfits, seems like it's going to be high. Marvin Jones, with no more Calvin Johnson in Detroit, Marvin Jones comes over from the Bengals. He is a pretty heavily touted guy at this point, I would say. What are your thoughts on Jones going into the season? He's, okay, I just want to put one little caveat in here. The reason he is so talked about is because he's so cheap, right? So he steps into that, I guess you'd call him wide receiver two. It could be one. It's going to be hard to know, total flip-flopping, if he and Tate flip-flop here. But the price on him on DraftKings is $4,600. On Tate, I believe it's like $7,000. Give me some thoughts on Jones heading into the season. Is it right to believe, you know, what people are saying here, or can we maybe fade this number on DraftKings?
So there's two separate questions here for me. The first one is that price thing. I mean, yeah, he's wildly cheap, and we've seen a lot of instances in the past where you can get a really cheap guy and go off at the wide receiver position, especially if you can fairly well predict what his role is going to be in a given week. That said, that is not the case with Marvin Jones here for me. I would much rather have, like, if I'm just going cheap, especially from a safety perspective, give me a cheap running back who's a declared starter for his team any day over a guy with the news we're seeing like Jones. So like, just to catch people up on this, the reports that I'm seeing here, okay, Stafford and wide receiver Jones have terrific chemistry, aka means nothing. Marvin Jones goes off early against old team. And you know what goes off early against old team means? He had 4 receptions for 65 yards in a preseason game. Like, let's just take a deep breath here and understand that the preseason just doesn't really mean anything. I mean, it means, I guess, a little bit more in a situation with so much turnover like the one in Detroit. But what we know for sure was that Golden Tate was insanely reliable. Like, talk about chemistry you're going to have with a wide receiver. What more would a prospective quarterback want than what Golden Tate provided for Matt Stafford last season when Calvin Johnson went down? I mean, 90 receptions on 128 targets is an absurdly great conversion rate. Golden Tate, yeah, he's not going to be the big downfield guy, but he's a big time yards after the catch guy. I mean, even not being his team's defined number one wide receiver for most of the season, he was still 8th in the NFL in yards after the catch. This is a good time to mention a new sponsor of ours, nohalftime.com, that allows you to have single player fantasy contests against other people. So basically, you pick a player, put them up against another player, and you know, you say, I'm willing to say for $25 that Golden Tate's going to be better than Marvin Jones. I'm willing to say 100% that Golden Tate is going to have a bigger week one than Marvin Jones. I don't think it's even close. Now, granted, their prices aren't especially close either. You're paying a lot more for Golden Tate, but this talk of him like unseating Tate as the number one receiver, just can I see one regular season game before people make statements like that? It just strikes me as complete hype and totally unjustified.
I think it's not the easiest fade of all time. Like, our system really likes Marvin Jones, so I don't want to get anyone off the scent here. It's like, this is one situation that we've taken a lot of time and looked at and just said, like, are we correct on the projected amount of targets for these guys? Because these are the hardest situations to evaluate. And news out of preseason is just not always the way to do it. I mean, he did have 5 targets in that preseason game. That's a nice number for a preseason game, just for really any wide receiver, considering how many snaps they're going to take just in getting off the field. So while we don't dislike Jones, I'm with you that the safety here is in Tate, because we have a clear sense of what happens when Tate is on the field with Stafford, and he is... You know, and there's no Calvin Johnson. That is almost a known quantity. I know people will say, well, they didn't have Jones. Right. I'm not sure. It doesn't affect people. It doesn't affect Tate to the level, I think, that some people think that it does.
And I think, like, with Marvin Jones in particular, too, like, first of all, the guy's 26 years old. And that's not, like, ancient by NFL standards, but it starts to feel more ancient when he's missed essentially, you know, let's see here. Well, one whole season injury and kind of been up and down. And like, what did he really do last season that makes people think this guy is the next big thing? I mean, I get that there's like, he's fast or whatever, but he didn't receive for 100 yards in a single game. He had one game with double digit targets. I don't know. Would I be surprised if he winds up being good? Of course not. Like, he's definitely got the talent, but I just don't know where the big time hype is here. Again, for $5,500 on FanDuel, could you do worse? Probably. You know, there's no question about that. But I don't know that we can just look at this situation and look at his chemistry or whatever and feel like this is a slam dunk cash game play for week one.
No, I think I'm with you there. The reason I brought him up, obviously, is because I've heard so many things, or heard so many people talk about him and write about him so far, that sometimes the hype train can just go a little out of control, and this might be where we are with Jones.
Buddy, and listen, I mean, we have an NFL podcast, and we know that the news is thin this time of year, and you're just looking for things to talk about. He's a worthwhile thing to talk about, but like, again, 3 of 6 targets for 25 yards and an end zone drop last game, like, who cares? Like, how many guys are doing exactly this right now?
Right.
I mean, if you want a sleeper for week one, give me Golden Tate, the guy no one's talking about, who apparently is off people's radars, who actually did have some absolutely enormous games last season.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. Going down the list, we know, I'm not going to bring him up too much because we talked about Tajay Sharpe last podcast. So if you want our take on that, head back to the last podcast. He's 3,000 on DraftKings. Looks like he's going to be pretty locked into the starter position. And there's a chance, you know, he has college pedigree. He came out of UMass where he's just not going to have the same amount of quarterback play / probably just overall coaching. People seem to be pretty high on him. I really like Sharp as a punt play this week. Other teams that are slightly different this year, in either because of injury or team movement. Now, Mohamed Sanu goes to the Falcons. We saw what Sanu could do when there was no AJ Green on the field, but he moves to just another team with another wide receiver one on his team. Does Sanu's move to Atlanta do anything for you for his overall value, or is he still just sort of always the bridesmaid, never the bride kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, Sanu's interesting because he's kind of made a career as a bridesmaid who's been a very reasonable play in many, many circumstances. Our projection system likes him because it sees a lot of usage for him. But I think, again, for week one, chances are good you're going to be able to get a lot of these guys at their week one prices in week two anyway. So instead of trying to be the one who guesses right on whether it's going to be Sanu or Marvin Jones, or frankly, any change of team receiver. I mean, we've even seen big name guys go from one team to the other, and you're the exception rather than the rule if you switch teams as a wide receiver and plug right in and are awesome, right? I mean, think about the hype around Percy Harvin. You know, like, Percy Harvin switches teams and he's going to be the next big thing, and like, just get ready because he's going to go off, and like, it's just nothing happens, you know?
Right.
And yeah, there are guys who go the other way. You know, Emmanuel Sanders went from Pittsburgh to Denver and was great. He also had Peyton Manning as his quarterback, you know? So I think that you can't just assume, you can assume nothing in the NFL anyway for a number of reasons, but particularly at the wide receiver position, which comes so much down to your scheme, your team's opinion of you, and your understanding of the team's playbook, which in many cases, these guys are running really complicated routes. There's a real comfort level issue, and you just can't count on it being there.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think I'm totally fine paying up for safety here. We've already established there's a lot of safety in the top tier of wide receivers. As many of these guys as you can get going into week one, you know, Antonio Brown's going to be pretty much chalk considering all the other value. And really, if you know a team is already going to target a wide receiver a lot, paying up for that in week one is 100% worth it, especially if you can get a little bit of safety with a new situation at running back. And I think what we Definitely. Established last time was there are enough guys like that, but I think you're looking at a situation where you're probably playing at least two wide receiver ones, maybe three Exactly. if you pay all the way down for a guy like Prescott.
Yep, go safe at wide receiver week one. You can go safe-ish on a cheap running back week one. And let's circle back around for week two is my last thing. I mean, we're going to get into all this next week on our picks podcast and the team breakdowns. But yeah, that's especially if you're new to this or coming over from baseball, that's definitely how you're going to want to go. Don't get talked into choosing between Sanu and Marvin Jones.
All right, that is it for us. DFSR.com is the site. DFSR.com/lab, L-A-B, gets you a free trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that will help you one-button calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Also access to our brand new state-of-the-art player lab that breaks down a lot of the different things that we were talking about on this podcast, specifically to wide receivers, but all positions. If you're looking to put together cash or GPP lineups, it's free from now till next Sunday. And after that, just $29.95 a month. And you are all set to go for NFL. Buddy, we will be back talking all football next week when we break down games, when we break down different lineups and strategies for FanDuel and DraftKings. Talk to you then.
Literally cannot wait.